materials in space. And some time ago, a scientist found, very much to their surprise, that there were organic molecules in this general interstellar cloud. And that was quite a surprise. And this brings me on to our main topic of even, the origin of life. Now, most people consider that life began on the Earth. And if you assume that, we can work out from two evolutionary sequences, beginning with very small single-celled creatures and ending up with you and me. It's the start of the trouble. And I suppose it's logical to assume that life on Earth began on Earth. But if this metaphor is true, could life have started a long way off and been brought to the Earth from space? Not on the Earth, but away out in space.
In a way, yes. And it's rather interesting because our legacy's ideas were coming to this favour because biologists found that life was rather complicated and they thought, well, it's so complicated that it couldn't have happened out in space. We're going still further. We're saying life is so exceedingly complicated that it couldn't have happened on the Earth, that one needs all the resources of the universe to put, or of our galaxy, stars, and so forth, to put life together. That is why we are returning to our lineage. We think of the Earth not as a place where life originated, but as a maintenance station for life, as a place where, when it was added here, it was able to survive and continue. We think it was added in the form of small components, which we call viruses and bacteria, and that they were assembled into what we call our genetic material, the material that's suited for building larger creatures such as ourselves. If I now might try to put together what we've said up to the moment, we start with the building blocks of life in interstellar space, being added to the solar system, being added to the outside of the solar system, and in particular to cometary kind of objects. And we think that it's comets that assemble the building blocks into simple living forms. And that the comets then, of course, as we all know, are ideal ways of moving material radially in and out of the solar system from the outer part to the inner part, and we think it's the comets that brought things here. And I'd like to just continue a little about comets, because this is a rather medieval sort of notion, and the biologists, I think, are very uncomfortable with it because it suggests the return to primitive superstition. But in a way, some of us have been responsible for this superstition by maintaining that comets are rather insubstantial objects, and it's true, one comet is a rather insubstantial object. But if you take all the comets and add them all together, they're not insubstantial objects, the whole crowd of comets. They're made of the right kind of material, they're made of perfect stuff for living material, just the right atomic composition. And in total quantity, if you add all the comets together, all this marvelous sort of living star material, the total mass is at least the mass of the Earth. And on a fair computation, I think one must say that the total mass might be as great as the combined mass of the outer planets, Uranus and Neptune.
Uranus and Neptune, therefore, are massive. Uranus has 14 times the mass of the Earth, and the slightly smaller Neptune has 17 Earth masses. And if the total cometary mass is as great as those combined, then there must be a tremendous number of comets.
Yes, more than 10,000 million of them attached to our own solar system. And of course, if you add all the many thousands of millions of other stars, which also probably have comets, the grand total of comets is truly fantastic. They are, if you think of them as a class, they are a very, very important class of objects.
But of course, many of these comets are quite invisible from Earth, but they're too far away. Don't you understand the kind of clouds? You agree with that theory?
Indeed, yes. I think most of the comets are pretty far out from the sun, and that is very important for life, because it's because the comets come from a great reservoir far out that we get them steadily over the years. If this whole process happened in one sudden moment of time, it wouldn't be any good. It's got to be something that continues, and comets are superb things to continue.
Well, the only bright comet that comes back regularly is, of course, Halley's comet. And then I think it brings us on to this fascinating suggestion that comets might actually be linked with diseases on Earth, such as influenza. Can you name any particular comet that's had that kind of effect over the last few thousand years?
You've already done it. I think Halley's is the obvious candidate. Most of the debris that we see around us in the solar system is from Halley's, and it's probably a particularly large comet. So I think this is the fellow, and he's been around, I would guess, from looking at the dynamics of the orbit for something like 5,000 years at least. So I think that has connected the history of disease and of life for the last 5,000 years.
But when you look back over the epidemic of influenza that we've had over the last 5,000 years, can you link these at all with the period that they've had in common?
To some extent, I don't want to set too much on this one, but there have been recurrences of influenza with the same brand of influenza, because this has occurred twice, with separations of about 76 years.
Then he said, a comet is a very rarefied thing. I mean, a comet's material is millions of times less dense than the air that you and I are breathing. And surely a comet couldn't inject enough organisms into our atmosphere to have any real effect.
Oh yes, even one comet can do an enormous amount. We think indeed that from comets, the whole of the Earth's oceans may have been derived, and that is a vast quantity of water. And just to set the stage for a disease, if one had only 1 gram of a virus, that would start the whole epidemic. That's an enormous quantity of stuff. So you see, the amount of disease material that one needs is absolutely minuscule. And if the comets have produced this great mass of water that we see in the ocean, and have produced a comparable amount in the form of life-forming materials, they've been entirely dominant in their influence on the Earth.
When you say the comets would actually dwarf our oceans here, do you mean physically, and they actually dump the water
yes,
on the Earth?
Yes, indeed, by plumping into the surface of the Earth, breaching the Earth's bank, and a great blob of water being formed, because the comets are, to a large extent, water.
So in fact, without comets, you think we would have no oceans, and therefore no life?
That's right.
On the other words, it's fair to say, then, that you regard comets as being of absolutely vital importance to the origin and evolution of life on Earth.
Yes, I do. And I find it rather strange to come back to this business of the medieval superstition to find myself supporting it, because the choice is not the sort of thing that I would have wanted to do, but that is just where the logic drives one.
So we must take a broad view, I think. If life came to the Earth via a comet, or at least in outer space, then we might learn something from looking at other planets. In the solar system, the only planet where conditions are even remotely like those on Earth is Mars. And the Viking probes that have been there have sent back pictures of a red, rock-hue landscape. They've scooped up the soil and they've analysed it in a search for life. And they found absolutely nothing, no trace of life at all. So I asked Professor Richard Anderson, why it was, if Mars has had the same kind of bombardment as the Earth, why no life apparently has arisen there? Could it be that our experiments were too limited?
The case for Mars is a bit, only just 2 minuscule spots on the surface that have been exposed. And the techniques that have been used to expose these two spots are also somewhat suspect. If the same equipment was put on the Antarctic ice cap, I suspect that nothing would have been found.
So in fact, you don't necessarily say that Mars is sterile?
No, I think the data is quite inconclusive. There could be regions on the surface of Mars where microbial life might be quite abundant.
Do you also think that there may have been past life on Mars on a wider scale than this day?
It would be very surprising if there isn't evidence for fossil life on Mars.
Could I come in on the moon on that one? A lot of people are worried by there being quite widespread retrievals of lunar material and yet no living forms found in that material. The reason, of course, is that if a bacterium hits the moon, it hits several kilometers per second, it has no atmospheric shielding at all, and it just goes in whack, and it instantly gasifies. The same is true for spacecraft, the same is true for a spacewalk. The bacteria would automatically destroy them, they'd be just completely in toxic gas, so one wouldn't expect to find any life at all in places where there isn't a nice soft landing provided by an atmosphere. And of course, Mars does qualify there, but the reason Chandler explained, there are other reasons why we wouldn't expect life currently to be found on Mars.
Well, so it's just Mars or isn't a very friendly place away from the Earth and possibly Mars. But looking at it from a much wider point of view, other stars with their own comet belts, I think it's true to say, isn't it, that if your theory is correct, life not only may be spread throughout the universe, it must.
That is the implication. I think the important word to use there was must. It must be every place where there is what I call a maintenance station, we're going to find life. And I would rather think that Mars at one time might have been a maintenance station whilst its waters were flowing. But surely there must be many places where this has happened. Do you have an idea of the numbers?
The numbers must be very fair, as we said, isn't it? There are billions of stars in the galaxy, which are probably very similar to the Sun, and very similar to the extent of being able to support planetary systems. So it would really be very surprising if life is not, if the galaxy is not just teeming with life.
And intelligent life, too.
I would have thought so, yes.
Well, then, let's bring us on to this question that everybody's asking. What about possible contact with other intelligent beings? Is this a possibility?
As long as one isn't too greedy about the answer, yes. It isn't something that's going to happen overnight, or perhaps even in a lifetime. But it's going to happen, I think. I would take a bet that it's going to happen. But I think it's a little bit like if you start with Galileo's telescope. You've got the progress in steps of technique from an early form to the great telescopes of the modern era. You know, you need a lot of technical development, and this might take a lifetime, it might take a century or two, but I think it's going to happen.
How do you think it made it up? Maybe it's going to get first?
At the moment, that looks the best bet. But, you know, today you begin to argue about lasers. Lasers don't look as good as radio, but before 1960, you didn't know that the laser existed, you know, so that there could be new techniques to come along.
New techniques? New ideas? Have you heard some very revolutionary ideas this evening? And if they are correct, then much of our accepted science would be wrong. And I ask the phrase, what was his philosophy about it?
Well, my philosophy is a somewhat hopeful one. I worked so many years in astronomy where we always struggling to get a few new facts. Cosmology is a particularly difficult subject because of the great dearth of new facts. Where I'm being encouraged in the sort of work that we're doing now is there seems to be a veritable flood of new facts coming almost every week, almost every month. And so I think we're really going to find the answer and know where it is today.
And these facts are totally unexpected in terms of the current paradigms that exist in biology, I think, isn't that
true? So there we have it. Textbooks tell us that life on Earth originated on Earth in a kind of little soup. We've heard this evening that this may not be true. Not for the Earth is a tiny body, and space is truly vast. There's a catch of interstellar matter we can see, there's a great deal that we can't see. And who knows how much life may exist up there, formed in the space between the stars.
Radiation is composed of radio waves are very special and unmistakable wavelengths, which were given off when the first atoms were formed, condensing out of the mixture of radiation and subatomic particles, expanding into primeval fireball. Extraordinarily, it's even possible to distinguish differences between different parts of the universe and that time, only 1,000 years after the beginning of time. Is that the end of the journey? Well, maybe not. The problem in seeing further back is that the radiation and atomic particles are so mixed up with each other, it's very hard to decide at what time a particular set of radio waves or other radiation came into being. But 1 or 2 hours after the beginning of time, the nuclei of atoms were beginning to form, long before they acquired orbiting electrons and became complete atoms. When this happened, a particular type of radiation would have been given off, high-energy gamma radiation. It's possible that, as with the radio waves characteristic of later epochs, something may be found in this particular gamma radiation. It may have a signature, as they say, which will enable it to be distinguished from any other radiation of the same kind. So far, it is only a possibility. And what about the first hour of creation? In view of the advances in the last few years, it does seem possible that eventually astronomers will be able to see back further still, to the first minutes, even seconds, after the universe first exploded out of an infinitely small, infinitely dense point and time began. But as yet, we have no idea how it might be done.
That's all from In Britain Now.
Testing, testing. 22nd of October 1978, notes made in the just afternoon. Suggestion is that we really know about abstract objects and that the suggestion contained in reflections on, first of all, well, this is all for middle section of the thesis, the suggestion contained in reference to the kind of corrigibility, question connection between the kind of corrigibility exhibited by the perspective which operates in affecting correlation of operations and quantities of mathematical formalism, referred to an openness. The idea this may refer to solidness and to development of foundations of kinds, which itself is connected with, which means involves moving away from the connection which Napier ceases existing between a notion of morphology directly referred to evolution of conceptual structure of systems of concepts for grasping reality and this general conception of reality that we can make intelligible. Certainly the idea that there is a link between either we take the line one that there's no such a link at all, complete autonomy perspective, operations and development of operations and mathematics, which autonomy certainly seems to exist in terms of, for instance, moving from the reals to the surreals, and referring back to the way in which Langevin seems to suggest a link between the notion of domain of variation and the conception of relationship between the domain of variation and the succession of fixed structures, one for each point. Domain of variation, as significance of having emancipated ourselves from this, in what sense we can be regarded as having emancipated ourselves from this, rather when we consider the complete autonomous perspective related to technical questions, the foundations of mathematics, which is operating in the case of the use of surreals to model, for instance, SADA hyperfunctions. We see the call into question the perspective of conceptual perspective on this development which Langevin suggests, and compare remarks by Lakatosh on conceptions of continuum. What I wanted to say was conceptions of abstract objects, the suggestion that we can refer the development, any development in the source of our conceptions of kinds of operations on abstract objects. Questions about cardinality. of the large cardinal theorems, independence proofs and proofs of large cardinal theorems, which involve extension of techniques which simply involve application of notions, isomorphism, the notions which C made brief remarks about the notions which set theory as foundational theory provides us, and just a question of whether we enter a dimension of which we can trace a connection between opposition of conceptual perspectives on those operations. As they might prefer to something outside, and the answer is no. Look in detail at remarks about conceptual perspective or structure provided by the sort of operations in basis for generalization operations suggested by category theoretic perspective on structures and set theory, set theoretic axioms within sort of study of topos, and categories having structure of topos, whose range of weaklings and axioms of choice, for instance, connection with independence proofs and set theory by classical methods. At present only just connect the relationship between perspectives, and yet reach the stage of being able to furnish sort of separate stronger proofs. Question of regard as proofs of the same propositions. What you wanted to be able to say was question about the nature of abstract objects. Those are done in Frege's remarks about objects. Articulation of objects, reality of objects, abstract objects, and refer, for instance, any development, whatever the qualitative source of development, for instance, system of recognition of adaptiveness of structure, a system of quantities, given structure of system of quantities, to its use in affecting what is recognition of its relevance to affecting correlation of parameters of some theory given the quite mathematical form of those parameters. Eventual significance of this correlation as it emerges, we must not prejudge in terms of, rather we do not prejudge the remarks in the notes you just made this morning in terms of any prior conception of the ways in which social structural theory is capable of undergoing development, and the any preconception determined by what would be a principal coherence of ontology, see for instance the remarks about twisters, and compare with the way in which Hooker views the relationship between the conceptual structure and the ontology of his theory and the mathematical structure and the mathematical formalisms, which he regards as reflecting these. We would argue that he's in error. But what you wanted to get back to here, this is a very disjointed set of reflections. This is a separate set of reflections now, but connected with the source of the first. Beginning of the first, it would have to be a direct generalization, acquisition of perspective on the direction in which we should look for generalization of the operations. On the basis of, for instance, on the structures. Foundational system, which perspective embodied a conviction regarding the nature of abstract objects, the notion as reflecting conception of abstract objects as discussed in Dunbar Frege as and in standard referential semantics, application of referential semantics to and model theory, for instance, the conceptual view of set theory, for instance, is the theory in which the models live, compare relationship between the logical connectives and the and set theory, initial isomorphism made for the middle and neighbor, compare, and as a result, an appeal to qualitative conceptual identity, which itself is arguably called in question in a rather different context, way in which it's called in question, for instance, in the context of reflections on the kind sketched by Graves and see your remarks on 1971 book, Spring of Ireland essay. Compare also, wanted to go and talk about, for instance, formal methods, whether the kind of constraints or the actual question about formulating such empirical claims, say whether we shouldn't consider, for instance, obviously a qualitative distinction between which appears we grasp between the kind of ontology suggested by QGMD, cosmology, suggestion for universes, the suggestion of complete of closed topological time just happens to be a topologically closed time, and the ontology that we admit for the universe in the case also tension here between that and between the way in which we formulate our conceptions, between the psychology of mathematical invention here, understood as operation of a cognitive faculty in the world, suggestion about requisite mathematical notions, the idea of requisite mathematical notions suggested by the kind of developments indicated by necessity for kind of conceptual development from development to conceptual perspective of mathematics, structures of the basic mathematics, see particularly the remarks in Laszlo and so on, Kaufman's remarks about priority structural notions with respect to the notions of operation on elements of collections and extension, the notion of collections and extension and a kind of atomicity implied there. There's another dimension to the question of atomicity and non-atomicity and the conception of the question of whether we have some notion of structure, which is not referred to plurality of structureless items, plurality of structureless items, compare that apparently graspable opposition between the principle coherence of ontology in the case of QGMD, in the case of EPT-based QGMD, and in connection with emergence of the idea of mathematical formalisms, we interpret a particular operation on quantitative mathematical formulas in terms of creation and annihilation operators, energies, curvature, certain curvature generating, for instance, production of particles, interpret a quite abstract mathematical formula in that way, but the way in which we define, for instance, operators, perspective which open to us, is itself subject to reconstruction. The idea of making that perspective itself with respect to the notion of abstract objects, which has nothing due to the notion of to appeal to ultimately to more quality conceptual identity. As this is embodied in, for instance, axiom of regularity, the idea that is not directly able to challenge one has to reject, but look, for instance, to the kind of ontology and the dimensions in which the order of developments of descriptive concepts might be devised, as suggested by the formalism. developments in the formalism viewed from the Gastronomical perspective. Question whether that is both Hooker and Gray's in different places. Suggests that we should be cheery here, that what is lacking here is bringing into conformity with awareness of the significance, conceptual perspective on the kind of operations and on quantities, basis of definition with respect to concepts at the base of the mathematics or formalism, and underlying the interpretation of theory. Suggestion that that can't be looked to or hoped for. Compare Finkelstein's remarks. Now, you want to get back to, first of all, discussion of Snead and the Lagrangians with respect to Hamiltonian formalism, and compare with, for instance, EVT-based recovery of the structural efficacy of, in terms of, with respect to descriptive concepts underlying the, guiding the development of and perspective of generalization operations, quantities, and formalism as it operates, as for instance, recovery of differential geometry. In the case of GR, from the perspective of quantum gravity, see your notes on QG75 in this connection, how that, the consequences that that has for Lagrangian, for the Snead form methods, on the one hand, and on the other hand, something quite different, namely reflection on abstract objects. Notion, as in the qualitative, the whether conception of numbers, the basis for definition of natural numbers in terms of concepts and application, again, demanding a qualitative conception of identity, appeal to qualitative conception of identity, that concept that picks out something in the world, model of concepts as subsumers, subsuming under, compare the kind of conceptual realignment suggestion. We can refer this to a whole conception. We also touched on conception of relationship between morphic identity between the model of cognition, the ontology of cognition as suggested by Quine. Putnam's views on imminence of truth, conceptual schemes, on suggestion of openness to revision, even on intentional logical connectives, as suggested by Putnam but not sketched very fully. Compare the output against this of Dummett and Hartree Field, on the other hand. These notes, which follow on from this point made on the evening of the 27th of October 1978 and on the subsequent morning of the 28th of October, 1978, while staying at the First House Hotel in Leicester, the first leg of the Methodist Heritage Fellowship Tour of England, and consist of reflections on some of the notes that you have made on the outline and introduction of the thesis in October, during the course of October 1978, and especially of material for the middle section of the thesis. First point to be made before humour, as this is in the game. In Dummett's notes on Frager. These are remarks about the definition of natural numbers, Sketch and Walker. The point about the definition of natural numbers offered by Frager is that concept of the world we have Frager's definition of concept and Sketch and Walker and in Dummett. The notion of incomplete expression, the role of complete expressions, this the of things which of notion of objects as primitive and fundamental notion of reference, which underlies all referential semantics, the prototype of all referential relations, the prototype relation of reference, which underlies all referential semantics, is that of a proper name and name, relationship between name and bearer. The difficulty here, for instance, in the case of Sellers' discussions about sense and denotation, the idea that conceptual revision in case science may involve complete abandonment of sense and denotation rather than denotational refinement in the kind sketched by Hartree Field in the case of course, concepts, which function as incomplete expressions. Question that the categories of the conceptual alter his conception of the which is explanatory in the sense of the theoretical explanation, but explaining why the concept of the covenant is in fact the script of concepts of the covenant theory were in fact inadequate and broke down when it is next minutes were made when you got back home to 3-4 close at 1:45 on the morning of the 29th of October after a few scattered notes on the reflections on the canonical concept of real number and connection with the suggestions made that you want to make in your book about the relationship between the conceptual methodological aspects and technical aspects of the foundation. Suggestion of the connection between both. viewed as who are primates as having counterparts in the sort of relationship between properties, sort of relationship between properties, because of the particular principle of appearance of ontology, that kind grasped directly in the metaphysical reflection on the most general kind of structure that we can encounter in the world, the kind which completely unacceptable methodologically and technically in the modern approach to the foundation of mathematics, for instance, the resting view from part of that morphology, the internal morphology of objects, resting the appeal on the notion of internal morphology of objects as discussed in Marx in Mabry, won't do at all. And it's a question of linear structure kind. So just the notion of composition, the functional composition itself, and Kierkegaard has obtained the definition of the notion of functional composition obtains the of identity. viewed as limits of, which result from, as being defined in the limit of results of applications of operations, two quantities defined on the structural system of which one produces, allows the definition in the limit of, for instance, real number viewed from the perspective of a different way of integrating, grafting it, and integrating it into a system of operations on quantities, where it still functions as a way of an item, but as a structural sort of set and such resources of its own. Can't carry over that kind of perspective on the two, perhaps. What one priority, the object of investigating, what one say is compare Twister's definition to Twister's, it is not to the kind of relationship between conceptual structure and mathematical structure, which of the mathematical form is kind of conceptual opposition between conceptual views and kind of suggested by Hooker as fundamental, as forming the basis of contrast between successive theories. Instead of a kind, the further development of which system is completely continuous. The form, the plane of the schema, suggestions about non-linearity, how accommodate non-linearity, must get clear on the very precise conceptual significance of non-linearity, reject suggestions of various exercises about those completely, but look at the research program that it leads to and generates. Look, however, at surreals in some detail, to fill out your own notes on the outline of the whole thesis, and then get to work on the introduction, get to weaving on this very, very tired.